The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine and BlackEnterprise.com. The first article is titled, 6-Year-Old Boy Becomes a New Mensa Inductee. 6-year-old Chandler Hughes of Texas has accomplished something remarkable for his young age. He was recently admitted as one of the youngest ever members of Mensa, a society for people with exceptionally high IQs. Chandler is part of a special fraternity of people who are essentially geniuses, his family told KPRC. It started early, his father said, of the boy who started reading at 1 year, 9 months. By age two, Chandler was already reading and doing math at a second grade level. He was enrolled in pre-kindergarten, but was far ahead of his peers academically. Now attending first grade at the Imani School, Chandler should technically still be in kindergarten given his age. Chandler has been drawn to medicine and healing others, so it makes sense that he wants to be a medical doctor, because I want to help people when they are sick. While Hughes' academic and reasoning abilities are clearly exceptional for his age, his father emphasized the importance of continuing to advance his social skills. His school provides an excellent environment for him to thrive both intellectually and socially. With Chandler's motivation to pursue medicine and his family's support, this 6-year-old's future looks bright. He's in a great environment where his teachers, his peers, all support him. Chandler's father said, just seeing how we can take this and increase literacy and math rates in our community, and for him to continue to succeed. Mensa works to foster a global community of bright individuals. The High IQ Society was founded in 1946, England, by Roland Barrel and Dr. Lance Ware. The Latin name means, quote unquote, table, and represents its non-biased round table membership. The only requirement is scoring in the top 2% of the standardized intelligence test. With over 150,000 members across 90 countries, Mensa has three core goals: supporting human progress through intelligence, furthering research on intelligence, and providing an enriching social network for brilliant minds. The next article is titled, Here's How to Write a Grant to Gain Funding. Grants are generally given to nonprofit organizations for programs and services that benefit the community or specific group of the general public. Most funding institutions don't provide grants to individuals who will use the proceeds to start or develop a for-profit business. As with any rule, there are exceptions, but usually when an individual does secure a grant that assists his or her enterprise, it is typically for a very specific objective, such as developing products that improve the quality of health care, and not general operating purposes. No matter if you are seeking government or private funding, a well-written grant proposal clearly states your objectives, sets forth a plan, and provides a realistic budget. The following tips will help you write a winning grant proposal. Make sure your mission and purpose fits closely with the funding entity's mission and purpose. Don't tailor what your business does to get the funding. Only apply for grants that look like they're specifically written for you for your business. Identifying state agencies, private foundations, and other organizations that give grants to individuals or small businesses requires considerable time, effort, and research. For starters, look in your own backyard to find grant makers that have previously funded projects or services for businesses like yours. Many state economic development agencies provide small business grants and other types of financial assistance. Once you identify potential funders, determine how you intend to approach them, make a personal contact, and cultivate relationships by email, telephone call, office visit, and/or letter of inquiry. Your grant proposal has to be prescriptive to what that funder is seeking, so get to know potential grant makers better by obtaining copies of their annual reports. Scrutinize their websites. What buzzwords do they use? You can even incorporate that funder's colors into the fonts and graphics that you use in your grant proposal. Most importantly, request a copy of the grant guidelines, follow the requirements of the funding notice or application to the letter. Your guide for what to include or not to include in your document is the request for proposal, RFP, or grant application. Give the funder exactly what they ask for, no more and no less. If the funder wants 2 to 4 pages, that is what you will provide, not 1 page over. In general, your proposal will start with an introduction, which includes the amount requested, followed by a description and brief history of your company and its products, services, or programs. Your proposal should describe anticipated and immediate short-term and long-term results, proposed implementation, staff or key personnel, budget, methodology, benchmarks, and timetable. A common mistake in writing a proposal is failing to distinguish between a goal and an objective to provide energy-efficient appliances to homeowners. Helping to cut cost is a goal, not an objective. A measurable objective will have a subject, an action, a location, a time frame, and a percentage. Provide a budget that breaks down line by line how you would spend the grant money. Some reviewers look at the budget first to gauge applicants. If you need help on this part of the grant or all of it, the American Association of Grant Professionals has a list of grant consultants on its sites. Grant writers charge anywhere from $40 to $150 an hour. Expect to pay from $1,000 to $3,000 for a grant proposal for private or foundation funding and $4,000 to $15,000 for a grant proposal for government funding, since such grant applications tend to be more intricate. Even if you don't hire someone to write it, consider hiring someone to review it. The next article is titled, "The Jackson 5 Christmas Album Hits Top 10 for First Time in 40 Years." Now that the holiday season has wrapped, Billboard has gotten a full account of Christmas playlist results, and the legendary Jackson 5 returns to the top 10 of the top R&B hip-hop albums chart for the first time since 1984 with the Jackson 5 Christmas album. The classic Christmas album, released October 15, 1970, jumped from 11th to 9th on the listed date January 6, which covers activity for the tracking week of December 22nd through the 28th. The album saw a 27% increase from the previous week and earned 27,000 equivalent album units. The Jackson 5's Christmas album features original classic hits like Santa Claus is Coming to Town and I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. The album followed the success of Jackson 5's four Hot 100 number one hits that year: I Want You Back, ABC, The Love You Save, and I'll Be There. Santa Claus is Coming to Town has reached the Hot 100 every holiday since 2020, but 2023 was the first year it was joined by Jackson 5's I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, which debuted at number 43 with 14.1 million official U.S. streams in the tracking week and a number 39th placement on streaming songs. The recent success of Jackson 5 Christmas album further solidifies the group's iconic status in music. It's the group's 15th top 10 on the top R&B hip-hop albums chart. It's also their first visit to the top 10 chart since the Victory album reached its final frame on the chart on September 22, 1984. Of course, the late Michael Jackson's history as a hit maker is worthy of its own post, thanks to Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad. The next article is titled, Here's Why the South is Leading in Economic Freedom. Are you seeking economic freedom? Data show that the promise of northern cities is rapidly diminishing as the economic gains of the South have finally eclipsed it. Personal and cultural ties deeply catalyze Black Americans' continued dominance in the South. In recent years, Black Americans who migrated to the South, especially those settling in economically thriving areas, the central southern magnet states of Texas, Georgia, and North Carolina, have been disproportionately young and well-educated. According to a report published by Bank of America, the region's lead will continue to soar after decades of strong population and economic growth in the South. Whether you want to migrate to a new city or region, look at these five economic activities in the South. From Buckhead to Midtown, Atlanta ranks peachy keen with the highest percent of Black-owned businesses at 7.4%. This is partly possible because of the multitude of programs and initiatives to support Black-owned businesses, including the Atlanta Business League, which provides resources and support to Black entrepreneurs, following Hotlanta, Washington, D.C., and Virginia Beach. The new Great Migration is a key driver to population growth. The 16 states that make up the southern region represented 39% of the entire U.S. population as of 2022. The South also has the largest and highest birth rate of the U.S. Census regions. Between July 2021 and 2022, Florida, South Carolina, and Texas were among the nation's fastest growing states by population. The volume of renewed Black migration to the South is notable, as are the changes they bring to the region about youth and human capital. Young Black people of all calibers are drawn to education and networking opportunities. The job market is getting hotter. The South has the highest job openings rate at 5.6% and the lowest unemployment rate of any region. The South also led all areas in hiring workers with a rate of 4.1%. For example, as of 2020, almost 60% of the black labor force, 11.8 million people, is accounted for in the South, McKinsey & Company reported. Additionally, Atlanta has 10 HBCUs providing education, training, and mentoring for black business owners. In the future, Georgia and North Carolina have the second most HBCUs, better business tax climate, and lower burdens. Data supports the Northeast states' worse business tax climates and higher tax burdens. The average rank for Northeast states is 38, while the average for the 6 state South is 17. This is a huge benefit for black-owned businesses. According to the Tax Foundation, the average state and local tax burden in the Northeast is 12.4% of net state products. The rate is 29% lower in Texas, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. Growing gross domestic product, GDP, surpasses Northeast. As reported in Bloomberg, the combined GDP of Texas, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and the Carolinas surpass the GDP of the Northeast region, including Washington, D.C., and the 11 states from Maryland up to Maine. In 2022, the national GDP in the South was 23.8%, while the Northeast was 22.4%. The South fell short over a decade ago. Although it is unclear what satisfies migrants of residents in the South, the Bank of America report suggests that people are intensely interested in their finances. The next article is titled, Midwife Turned Entrepreneur Opens Virginia's First Black-Owned Birthing Center. Meet Racha Tahani Lawler Queen, a fourth-generation midwife turned entrepreneur who founded Gather Grounded Midwifery, the first and only black-owned Virginia birthing center. The newly opened facility is designed to be a welcoming haven for expanding families. Lawler Queen embarked on this journey earlier this year, driven by her passion for providing care that resonates within the community. I got on a Zoom call with black birth workers in RVA, and they were just telling me about what they were facing in regards to the lack of representation in birth, especially out of a hospital birth, Lawler Queen told WTVR. With the community support, Lawler Queen initially planned to transform a Richmond home into a birthing center. However, she faced challenges with city permits that restricted the growth in the area. Determined to make a difference, she found a new location in Chesterfield County, Virginia, which officially opened its doors in August. Gather Grounded Midwifery offers intentional spaces for expecting mothers, featuring a family room and birthing room, accommodating diverse families. Lawler Queen emphasized the importance of families having care that reflects and supports their unique identities, allowing them to experience pregnancy without fear or unnecessary interventions. It's meant to feel like a place where people see themselves, they feel seen, they feel safe, she said. With over $30,000 raised on the Birthing Cottages GoFundMe page, Lawler Queen acknowledged the diverse support, including money, art, toys, and diapers. She credits the community's enthusiasm for the center's success, emphasizing that it enables her to support families during one of their most significant life moments. It really gives them even more power and a greater voice and provides them an opportunity without fear to birth in freedom, to give birth in a way that affirms them and their family, and how they want to move forward after they have this baby, she said. The next article is titled, Three Health Hazards in the Office and How to Avoid Them. The average morning commute to the office can be a walk on the wild side for any CEO or entrepreneur with today's traffic conditions, especially in major cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. Hazards might abound even before you get to the office, but what about those present once you arrive? With some entrepreneurs spending at least 62 hours per week working and some burning the midnight oil past 70 hours, it's evident how vital it is to have a healthy daily workplace experience. Check out three health hazards that might present themselves in the office and how you can avoid or combat them. First, joint conditions. Experts say repetitive movements can cause discomfort or even injury from conditions such as carpal tunnel syndrome, and sitting all day can cause stiffness, pain, or even blood clots. The solution? The National Institute of Health recommends participation in on-the-job conditioning, performing stretching exercises, and taking frequent rest breaks. It also suggests having workstations, tasks, tools, and tool handles redesigned to enable your wrist to maintain a natural position during work. Secondly, airborne hazards. According to the CDC, more than 25 million adults in the U.S. have asthma, including allergic asthma. Indoor triggers of asthma include dust mites, mold, and insects. These triggers also affect those without asthma, causing breathing issues and skin irritations. The CDC indicates that indoor environmental air quality at your workplace can be affected by various factors, from caulks, sealants, and coatings to air fresheners and other scented products. Potential health issues related to these factors include headaches, dizziness, fatigue, and irritation of the eye, nose, and throat. The solution? The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, recommends to avoid blocking air vents with office furniture, complying with or enforcing a company smoking policy to only smoke in designated office areas, and disposing of all garbage promptly in the proper receptacle. Employers are also encouraged to create additional policies that protect non-smokers from secondhand smoke, enforce rules on trash disposal, keep up with HVAC system updates, and maintain great pest control practices. Using environmentally friendly cleaning products, office supplies, and even furniture can do wonders as well. If you have asthma or allergies, be sure to keep a supply of the necessary medications at the office for all emergencies. Number three, fatty food temptations. This doesn't have a direct link to immediate health emergencies. However, over time, multiple trips to the vending machine for sugar and fat-filled snacks definitely doesn't help in reaching wellness goals. The solution? Drink lots of water throughout the day and keep a stash of your own healthy snacks at the office. Experts tout the benefits of drinking a full glass of water before eating to avoid overindulging. Also, the more healthy snacks you invest in to munch on at your desk, the less likely you'll spend the extra dollar or two on that bag of chips, chocolate bar, or soda. The next article is titled, Nike Recruits Tennis Legend John McEnroe to Travis Scott Shoe Campaign. In a recent flare-up between rapper Travis Scott and tennis legend John McEnroe, A leaked Zoom meeting revealed a fiery exchange over the naming rights of the Nike Mac attack. According to Wrap Up, the dispute took a public turn on December 10th when McEnroe, in a video posted by the People Gallery's fashion page, took matters into his own hands. McEnroe, the Wimbledon champ, clinched the prestigious title not once, not twice, but three times during his prime from 1981 to 1984. Renowned for his fierce competitive spirit on the tennis court, fans affectionately dubbed him McNasty. His latest video appearances are directly correlated to the persona he's been known for throughout his tennis career, often appearing in commercials and movies portraying the McEnroes of his Wilmington days. John McEnroe used the video to assert his historical connection to the iconic sneakers, emphasizing, "I was wearing these things in the 80s before this guy was born. Now, all of a sudden, Travis Scott's got this thing, Cactus Jack, so I just made it Cactus Mac. I mean, come on, a bit of respect. That's all I'm asking for." Speculation arose in the comments section, suggesting that the clip might be part of a promotional stunt orchestrated by Nike. Users pointed out the impeccable timing, with one remarking, "Seeing this, that call was for sure marketing." In June, Nike announced the revival of McEnroe's Mac Attack shoe, with Scott contributing to the redesign of the silhouette. The sneaker, paying homage to the original 1984 design, launched in a white, light silver, and black colorway. As the latest report, neither Scott nor Nike has publicly addressed McEnroe's recent modifications. Scott, a Houston native, has long collaborated with Nike, partnering on various sneaker renditions. The next article is titled, Chick-fil-A commits second $500,000 gift for Morris Brown and College Leadership Initiative. Chick-fil-A has announced its commitment to another round of funding for Morris Brown College. The fast food chain has awarded $500,000 to fund the Atlanta HBCU's Leadership Development Initiative for its students. According to a press release obtained by Black Enterprise, the award marks the continuation of its partnership with Morris Brown College and the second round of funding from the restaurant company. Through the flagship initiative, student leaders at the Liberal Arts College will be selected to participate in the program that will provide the tools and skills needed to thrive in hospitality and organizational leadership careers. I look forward to Morris Brown being a direct pipeline of diverse leaders within the career fields of hospitality and organizational leadership for organizations like Chick-fil-A, said Dr. Kevin James, president of Morris Brown College. James's goal is to accelerate Morris Brown. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.